Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 144. Today my guest is Clay Hall, and Clay Hall is the corporate sales manager for Blanchard Equipment.
And I wanted to get Clay on and talk to him a little bit about the opposite side of the spectrum that we've been seeing. We have all this stuff in the news with the flooding and the nonstop rains in the central part of the Midwest, and Clay's fighting a different battle out there. It's been hot and dry for pretty much the same amount of time it's been wet and cold here in the Midwest. So, Clay, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Casey. Glad to be on with you this morning.
I appreciate that. So, before we get started, Clay, why don't you give a little background on yourself and how you how your career's ended up to where you're at today?
Okay, sounds good. Been in the John Deere dealership business for 19 years. Started over on the parts counter, actually as a part-time parts employee. As we've gone through acquisitions over the years, moved into a sales role and then to a store manager role, and then about 8 years ago into the corporate sales manager role. And I've been doing that ever since, and I really enjoy that. It's no doubt a different challenge every day, but certainly enjoy it and look forward to hopefully many more years to come.
Right on. Okay, Clay, so let's talk about what you see happening out there right now. So we're, like I said, when I started out here, it's been, epic rains and coolness throughout the Midwest, corn belt and soybean belt, and even down south into the deep south into Mississippi, Arkansas, Alabama, that area. But you're right on this different weather pattern that we're seeing out there in the southeast, where it's been really hot and really dry. So why don't you talk about that a little bit and how that's affecting what you see happening out there?
Okay, sure. I guess I'll give you a little bit of background as far as what the geography of our dealership locations look like and kind of back into your question just a little bit.
Okay.
So we have 16 locations. We're evenly split. 8 of those are in Georgia, on the eastern side of Georgia, and then 8 of those are in South Carolina. From a crop mix, we're heavily weighted in cotton, peanuts, soybeans, and corn. Most of our planting begins, of course, with corn, and then as we move into cotton and peanuts, that's an early May sort of planting window. And then to answer your question, to make that relevant to your question, in our early spring and even into the early summer months, We just were extremely dry, Casey. We were, I think, 6 to 7 weeks in a row where we had zero rainfall. And we had about three and a half weeks in a row that we were at 100-plus degree temperatures. And that just doesn't bode very well for good planting and good beginning of a planting season. So unlike many of my friends in the Midwest, where those guys were extremely wet and stopped planting for that reason, we were extremely dry and hot and had to stop planting for that reason. So after we went through that spell and finally got some moisture in the ground, we were up and going again in planting. About 60% of our acreage is irrigated. The other 40 is not. So we lost quite a bit of corn acreage to the drought that had already been planted, of course. And it's really stunted the growth on our cotton and peanuts as well. So it's definitely had an effect. I guess we won't know that full effect until we get to harvest and see what some of the yield impact has been.
Okay. So what is the what's kind of the mood of the customer that you're working with now? I mean, commodity prices are kind of bouncing up a little bit from where they've been. We have these kind of big swings, a lot of volatility in the market right now. But I guess what's the overall temperature of your customer base?
I would say it's a little bit better, a little more favorable than it was this time 12 months ago. The movement in corn, you know, 450 corn doesn't change a lot of the rationale between for what we do over in Georgia and Carolina because of the lack of corn acreage compared to what you know what you guys do in your side of the world. But you know, we probably monitor cotton prices more so than anything else. And you know, we're seeing cotton still in the mid-60s, and we really need to see a bump in that before we get a lot of optimism, you know, on the Georgia and Carolina side of the world.
All right, so cotton was the next thing I want to talk to you about, and I'm glad you brought that up. And that is a huge part of any business in the southern part of the U.S., especially what we've seen over the past, you know, 5 years or so. I mean, you had a stretch there where cotton was kind of worthless, and there, you couldn't get rid of a cotton picker. And now you've got cotton to the point now where machines are really moving, and you start to see some stuff really become it's getting to the point now where it is I've talked to guys where they have waiting lists for people wanting to buy used equipment, and obviously new equipment's allocated as well. But when you start taking a look at what's going around the world and some other key growing areas of cotton, you got to have some little bit of excitement. There's the cotton market's going to have maybe even if it's just a temporary upward move in prices. So I guess talk about what you see happening on the equipment side of the business and what you see going on and how that's affecting your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that cotton equipment has been a bright spot for us, at least for the last couple of years. To your point, a lot of that is relative to allocation and how that's beginning to move the pricing of used equipment in the right direction. Strangely enough, you mentioned the comment of people having waiting lists. I had a neighboring dealer sent me a text this morning asking me if they had any used pickers available that he could get, and we don't. I think we are in the boat with many other dealers where we've pre-sold all the trades and we're sitting here, and there simply is this much more demand than there is supply, and that's nice. That's the first time we've been in that situation on cotton equipment in a number of years. I think that it's, you know, we'll continue to keep the cotton picker pricing strong as demand continues to be high. And to your point about other growing areas, other growing markets for cotton, you know, I would like to think that there's some upside potential here in the next 2 or 3 years for cotton. And as long as allocation continues to stay in place, demand stays high, I think for the most part we'll be able to have a premium price on used cotton equipment.
Yeah. That's a good problem to have. You know, I kind of, there for a while, you know, cotton pickers are one of those things that I don't have a lot of exposure to just because of where I'm at. You know, when I worked back in Kansas, we had some stripper cotton down there, but very few machines running around. Wasn't a big deal till you got further south of us. With the way that wheat prices were going, stripper cotton got to be a bigger deal, and you started seeing more wheat acres getting put into cotton acres back down there. So have you seen a major switch in your crop mix from over the last couple of years into more cotton, or has it stayed pretty much the same mix you've seen over the last 2 years?
I would say that we have added a few more cotton acres. We've taken some away from peanuts and put it into cotton. For your listeners that don't have any peanuts in their area, that is a market that's been challenged pretty hard here the last couple of years from a pricing perspective. Very weak, and as we've seen that occur, cotton has picked up some acres there. And I really foresee that, you know, unless peanuts rebound considerably in the next year or two, that we'll continue to put more and more acreage in the cotton locally, and see that area of our business continue to grow.
What's driving the peanut market to where it's been such a struggle to get good pricing?
The bulk of that, Casey, over the last number of years, the production of peanuts has been pretty strong, in some cases much better than what they expected. So I think that there's a glut of peanuts sitting out there that's got to be consumed before we can get back to having a reasonable tonnage price.
Gotcha. I got you. All right. So export market's always one of those things. I get guys all the time from in you know, Northern Africa, Southern Europe, in that area where they're growing some cotton, China, India, excuse me, that are always looking for used pickers and strippers, mostly pickers. And so with this tight supply issue you have, what's the export market look like for used machinery? And is that something that you've even explored with the current condition that you're in right now?
Yeah, we really have not looked at that at all over the last couple of years with machinery demand being as high, you know, domestically as it's been, and the population of machines being as low as it's been. We haven't looked for that at all. To be totally honest, we, again, as I mentioned, the other dealer this morning, and I think many other dealers could probably sell a number of used machines if they had them in their possession to do that today. So definitely not been a need. Certainly in the future, as cyclical as the business is, it will be in the future. But short term, I don't think we'll be looking to export any cotton equipment at all.
Right on. Okay, so the next question I had for you then was, with the introduction of the CP picker here, what's that been, 5 years ago now, I guess? Maybe a little bit
more. Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so how's that affected the overall, you know, support equipment side of your business? We start looking at the number of tractors you needed to run, you know, bell modulars and stuff like that. How's that affected the sale of tractors, and how's that affecting your business?
Yeah, very, very good question. I'll be the first one to say that when they first came out with the Baylor style picker, we were very, as a dealership, and others as well that I spoke with, very uncertain how a high dollar machine like that would be accepted into the market. But it happened, and it happened much faster than I certainly would have projected. And to your point, when you think about the number of supporting equipment that's necessary now to harvest cotton, it is much different looking today than it was you know, back 10 to 15 years ago. So for sure, you know, the module builder is not necessary anymore. Bolt buggies aren't necessary anymore. And when you think about going from a production system like that that takes, you know, at least two or three tractors and those pieces of supporting equipment essentially down now just to one machine and an operator and then a tractor to move the bales around once it's finished, if needed, it definitely makes a difference. In years past, we would have customers who would typically buy older high-hour tractors to do some of those functions with. And that seems to be kind of eroding, to be honest with you, as we go through this cotton process. And I would say that 65 to 75% of our cotton producers now have made that transition into a roller type picker. So again, it's affecting how we sell tractors. And now, you know, those tractors have to go somewhere because we're continuing to trade them in. That kind of creates another challenge or another stumbling block for those machines.
So would your 200 plus horsepower tractor be kind of a pinch point in your inventory right now, used inventory?
It is. If we look at it from a low hour perspective, Casey, it's really not. But we do have some concerns, to be totally honest. If you look at a 200 plus horsepower tractor that's, say, 6-7 years old and 3,500 or more hours, that is a concern. We're watching that very closely, and when we trade for those, we're being very cautious on those.
Yeah. Are you seeing any kind of demand right now back into the Midwest where maybe someone is looking for that cheaper used tractor that can maybe lease real cheap? Do you see anything like that coming back into the Midwest or over into the High Plains?
No, not so far. Not anything that's that high hour of a tractor. We're having some successes with, you know, with leasing 2-3-4-year-old tractors with reasonable hours. But it seems to us that once we get past that 3,500, 4,000 hour range, there's just a real weakness in the market for that.
Yeah. Leasing has been a kind of good segue to my next question here, but leasing has been one of those tools that have been utilized through this downturn more than probably in the past, in past downturns, just because of the exception or the exception, the how people have accepted that back into the market as part of a tool when it comes to financing. So how's leasing played a role in your current market, and how do you see it continuing on into the future?
Sure. You know, I don't think we have been any exception to that rule as far as, you know, adopting that probably at a greater rate than we have in years past. So we have, over the years, have rented a lot of machines, maybe a couple of months in the spring and then a couple of months in harvest. And it really probably carried more 8R inventory than what we should have or what was healthy for the business. So we looked at the leasing piece as an opportunity to really scale back our 8R inventory, but still offer the customer that had been doing those 4 months rentals between the spring and the fall a good reasonable rate to do a John Deere Financial lease. That's exactly what we did. And to your point, it's, you know, it's been aggressive for us to be able to do that to help us with our inventory. But again, it leaves the customer a very good option. And in most cases, they're not spending any more on an annual lease than what they were spending with us on a 4 month rental during the scope of a year.
Right.
I think we will continue to, you know, to seek after lease options for customers. I just think that it makes good sense for us, helps us manage our inventory, and then gives the customer a way to, number one, have a low-priced option for horsepower and for hours, but then it also helps us kind of as a trigger point for future trades, too.
Planters right now, there's a lot of stuff going on with planters. It's that time of the year where early order periods open up across about all manufacturing lines, it seems like. We're starting to see maybe a little bump in planter demand, especially with some of these guys that have had planters for 3 or 4 years and they rebuilt them several times now, and they're just looking at maybe upgrading. What's your feel on the overall planter market, and how's that look for you guys down there?
Sure. I don't disagree with your statement. We've got a good many planters in our AOR that have some age to them. To your point, have maybe been rebuilt once or twice, and just it's probably time to make a transition to a new machine. Last year, we had a reasonable planter EOP. It looks like this year is going to be about the same, if not a little bit better. But I really think it goes back to the age of the machine and just looking for some newer technologies and some efficiencies in the field. And we're pretty well staged to have a very decent EOP on planters here for the first phase anyway.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So that's the same things that we're seeing out here. I mean, it's just one of those deals where high-speed planter technology, I think when it first came out, was no one really thought about it from the agronomics perspective outside of just going fast. And what you see now with how fast you can plant it and what your stand looks like and what your, you know, spacing and all the different stuff that comes through it, it's really made a big difference in the way people think about planters. You know, it's just made a big jump in their vision of what a planter can do.
That's correct.
Okay. Sprayers also another thing that's out there right now that folks are looking to get orders on. Our sprayer market's been kind of the same for the past 2 or 3 years. You know, there's nothing, not a big difference with us being such a heavily demanded market on the corn and not necessarily soybeans, but just corn. And the way the market's been, it's just been a pretty steady flow of sprayers there. But this year, we kind of see a little bit of a spike in what we've seen with sprayers. Are you seeing something similar out there, or how is your sprayer market compared to what's going on in the rest of the world?
Yeah, I would agree with you on those comments too. I guess to kind of preface the conversation on you, we were able to move our used sprayer inventory much faster. That seemed to rebound much quicker for us than what we had ever expected. if you had asked me 18 months ago if I wanted to sell a new sprayer, I would not be very happy. But used have kind of washed through, which leaves us in a much better position to be more aggressive on some new sales. And that's really where we're at. And I think it goes back to a conversation much like our planters. It goes to technology. We've sold a few ExactFly machines over the last year or so, but that conversation seems to be much easier now, and that seems to be driving some sprayer sales. And we've seen a very good take rate on ExactFly this year compared to the last couple of years. And again, I think it just goes back to a machine with a few years of age and quite a bit of technology updates with ExactFly and a couple of other things. That's definitely driving demand.
Yeah, that ExactFly is like you said, it's one of those things. The willingness to adopt that when it first comes out is always not any new technology. No matter what it is always kind of slow. But once you see it in action, it does kind of tell that story of efficiency that we all try to tell, and you know, really limiting the you know, the input costs that you put in there, and the savings that come along with that. I think we had a deal where a guy tested it and on one circle in 120 acres, he had 2 acres of overlap. So that's a very, very tight, narrow window there. We start looking at the cost of inputs and what that little option can save you.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think, you know, as a dealership, we have to make sure that we're ready to do demos and show the value added opportunities of ExactFly. It's definitely there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you can, it is an expensive option, but when you go back and, like just the example I gave you, you take that and you extrapolate that across the entire spray season, how much money did you save, and how's that going to, you know, what's the option cost versus what it saves, it pencils out at the end.
Yes, it really does. There's definitely some cost savings involved.
Yep. All right. Okay, so you take a look at what you see going through the spring here, or the summer period that we see right now, and we're headed into that late harvest season that we see coming up this fall. What are some of the positive notes you see happening out there, and what are some of the negative notes that you're kind of worried about headed toward the end of 19?
Okay. As far as positive notes, I think we will continue to have some strong row crop tractor business. I don't say that business is extremely strong, but for us, it does seem to have kind of flatlined on a pricing perspective, and we're not seeing declines as sharply as we were in the last, you know, 2-3 years on high horsepower row crop tractors. And so from a stability standpoint, I'm very pleased about that. I think that will continue. I think demand's going to continue to pick up some. As far as looking at negatives, we're not a huge combine dealer by any stretch. We're not out selling dozens of new combines every year, but we do have a few used ones still that are concerning to me. We just essentially don't have any activity on combines, and that's certainly concerning. And you're just looking at the overall market on combines and the population of used machines that are out there on Machine Finder and other sources. That's concerning. Number one, with the machines that we have in stock today, and you know how that will affect us selling new machines in the future.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on the combine market, man. That's the one market that I have the most concern about. And it's not so much for us where we sell a lot of combines. You know, where we've got the 1- and 2-year-old machines feel like there's a, even the 3-year-old machines feels like there's a fair amount of demand for those, just for the hour range that people are looking for. It's when you get to machines that are about 5 years old and older, there are a lot of those machines out there just because there was a lot of them produced. And there's a lot of used deal market out there. My biggest concern that I have with the overall market in general is, you know, we've had a 5-year period here where it's been pretty tight and things have been pretty, you know, there's not been a lot of profit made. So no one really traded the amount of equipment that they would have normally traded in that time frame, and now guys are wanting to come in and trade stuff, and what we're seeing is they're getting a lot of the same equipment with the same kind of hour range, and it's kind of all falling in that that 12, 13, 14 model range, and whether it's tractors, combines, planters, whatever, sprayers, doesn't really matter. They're all kind of falling into that same time frame. That's my biggest concern headed into the end of the year, that there could possibly be a bubble being created here. And as inventories become stagnant and there's not a lot of buyers for those older, higher-hour machines, we could see some auction movement that could really drag the price of those equipment down.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. I've heard you make the comment in the past that it's, you know, and rightly so, with conditions that we had, it's almost like we missed a trade cycle, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years, and now it's those problems are rearing their head, and it's that trade cycle looks like is getting ready to come to us as dealers, and yet the demand is so low for those, you know, 7-8 year old tractors, combines that you mentioned, and again we're looking at some pretty high hours on those machines, and the demand is so soft for that. I simply don't know where those machines are going to go to in the volumes that we as, you know, dealer organizations across the country are probably going to have to trade for.
Yeah. I'm in the camp that whoever just figures out how to export those machines, those hour range machines, into areas that can pay for them. That's always the hard part about export. And any kind of volume is going to be, is going to have a pretty good strategic position on the overall market as a whole and what they're going to be able to do. So that export business is a tough thing to figure out. And it's very fickle, and it's hard to find solid partners to work with.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Finding somebody that's a good partner to work with and giving us a good outlet, that seems to be difficult. And then those pockets seem to dry up almost as fast as they're created. So that's a difficult position too.
Yeah. It's the master chess game, man. You figure that one out, you're going to be a winner. So
it's absolutely.
But until then, we have to figure out how to do it here locally. And I have my concerns about what that looks like going into the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get much easier as we get to the end of the year. I certainly agree.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Clay, we've had a good conversation here. I appreciate you being on the podcast. If folks wanted to check out Blanchard Equipment and what was going on there, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. The best way to check us out is on Twitter or Facebook, and then BlanchardEquipment.com is our website. And again, thanks for having me on this morning. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Clay, and look forward to talking with you in Nashville coming up here in October.
Yep, sounds great. I'll see you then.
All right, Clay, take care.
Thanks, Casey.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find a scene.